acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 44, Mother Grain, Sunday, June 6, 2014. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Yinhu Chaoyuan, Silver Lake Tea House. Show notes for this episode can be found on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, an active group on Ravelry, and is available on iTunes. Today's episode includes the following segments: Yarn Lover at Large, A Little Bit of Learning, and Ever Expanding Skill Set. Welcome to new listeners, Jay Chant, who is Julie from Seattle, TRL710, Toby from Berkeley, California, and MMLT, Mary from San Diego. Since my last recording, I've been very busy enjoying summer, and that has included getting some things done around the house, doing a lot of porch spinning and porch knitting, and of course, Tour de Fleece began yesterday, so I've been doing some spinning every day. For any listeners who aren't that familiar with Tour de Fleece, this is an event for wheel spinners and hand spinners to challenge themselves to do some spinning every day that the cycling occurs during the Tour de France. There are two rest days and there are also two very challenging days, and spinners are encouraged to match the pace of their work in spinning with what's going on in the tour. And you're also invited to set numerous personal goals for what you would like to accomplish. Last year during Tour de Fleece, I focused on learning to use my Louette spinning wheel more efficiently. And this year I'm going to work with a small Turkish spindle that I ordered from Jenkins Woodworking. This is a beautiful handmade Turkish spindle. It is very light. I think it's 19 grams. And it spins very, very fine. For two reasons, I want to focus on using this Turkish spindle. One is that I will be taking a class at the Super Summer Knit Together with Malia Jackson, who is a very accomplished spinner with hand tools, and I hope to learn a lot from her. And the other reason to focus on hand spinning as opposed to wheel spinning this year is that I will be spending quite a bit of time on the road. And I don't think I will be taking my Louette spinning wheel with me everywhere I go like I did last year. I will be doing some spinning on my wheel when I'm home and available to do that. And the remainder of the time, I will focus on a very meditative type of spindling and working on some little batlings from Hobbledehoy that I purchased at the Maryland Sheep and Wool Festival. I'm spinning these very fine, and then I'm plying each of the little batlings on my wheel. So it's a fine two-ply. I think it's a very, very light fingering or heavy lace weight that they're coming out to be, and I'm not sure of yardage at this point. What I do know is that the weather has been beautiful here in the Delaware Water Gap and not too hot, and I've just been spending every minute I possibly can on my porch. This morning I was using my Turkish spindle and enjoying the peace and quiet of the Sunday morning, and I watched as a great blue heron flew in to wade around in the water and try for fish. This is very typical sight here in the summertime. The great blue heron visits several times a day. And sometimes there's more than one. I'm not sure if it's a mating pair or the two are of the same sex. It's hard to tell. And the tree growth along the creek means that we don't always have an adequate view of the heron while they're wading around in the water, but it's unmistakable when a heron flies in because they have a very large wingspan and a certain kind of graceful motion that never fails to attract my attention, even when I have my eyes down on my work. This morning, when the heron took off to leave and go up the stream, it was honking. They rarely make noise that I have heard. They're always very stealthy. I don't know if something startled it or it was honking for any particular reason, but I got to hear quite a bit of it because it kept on going all the way up the creek bed as it flew. And the sound is reminiscent of a Canadian goose, but not nearly as loud and much raspier. That made for a very pleasant start to my day and just another very enjoyable and interesting thing that happens when you are able to spend a lot of time in nature and you just leave yourself open to the possibilities, just observing and listening as much as you can. Several listeners left very nice messages about their enjoyment of the poetry I read during the month of April for National Poetry Month. And I thought I would, on occasion, select a poem that's fitting for the time of year or some recent event. And today I have chosen Morning Swim by Maxine Kumin. I found this on a website called Poetry 180. And you may not be familiar with Poetry 180 unless you are a high school classroom teacher. When a poet laureate is selected by the Library of Congress and invited to perform the duties of the poet laureate in the United States, they are encouraged to come up with a project that expands the citizens' understanding and enjoyment of poetry in some way. There are no parameters for what this has to be, but various poet laureates over the years have really dedicated themselves to far-reaching projects. And when Billy Collins was selected poet laureate, he came up with this idea called Poetry 180 that would be a collection of 180 contemporary, mostly contemporary, very accessible poems for high school classrooms. And the idea was that one could be read aloud every day and shared in the classroom, and maybe some discussion would ensue, and maybe it would just be a reading of a poem, and that would be all. And it would be a way for students to just become more comfortable with hearing and reading and thinking about poetry over the course of a year. And then there was a companion site and a companion text. These were also released as small collections of poetry in paperback called 180 More, I think. If you're new to poetry or poetry in the past has been very distasteful to you, but you'd like to re-examine your relationship with it, I highly recommend these collections, and the 180 I know is available online. I've linked to it in the show notes. I'm just reading around through numerous authors and seeing if there's something that catches your interest, or an author with whom you identify. So here is Morning Swim by Maxine Kumin. Into my empty head, there came a cotton beach. A dock wherefrom I set out, oily and nude, through mist, in chilly solitude. There was no line, no roof or floor to tell the water from the air. Night fog, thick as terry cloth, closed me in its fuzzy growth. I hung my bathrobe on two pegs. I took the lake in between my legs. Invaded an invader, I went overhand on that flat sky. Fish twitched beneath me, quick and tame. In their green zone, they sang my name, and in the rhythm of the swim, I hummed a 2-4 time, slow hymn. I hummed, "Abide with me." The beat rose in the fine thrash of my feet, rose in the bubbles I put out slantwise, trailing through my mouth. My bones drank water. Water fell through all my doors. I was the well that fed the lake that met my sea, in which I sang, "Abide with me." This past week, my mother and I spent a few days with my sister Jessica at her camp in Vermont, and we had a great time working in the gardens and eating some really good ice cream. Jessie does a lot of cooking for us while we're there, and she made some amazing pizza and chapatis and some other recipes that I will be trying when I have a little more time this summer. And on the way back from Vermont, I took a bit of a different route so that I could visit Green Mountain Spinnery in Putney, Vermont. The Green Mountain Spinnery is a worker-owned cooperative, and they were very generous with my mom and me when we arrived. We were given a tour of the entire facility. I don't know if that's typical, but it certainly was a treat. The spinnery uses fleece from the United States for all of the wool that they sell. They also process and spin wool in small batches for individual farms and purveyors. So they make their own Green Mountain Spinnery yarn, but then they will also handle processing on an individual basis. So we were able to see all of the vintage equipment in action, and we were able to inhale the fleecy, sheepy fumes for a while. And then I did some shopping, not too much shopping, but just a little bit of shopping. And one of the yarns that I purchased was a wool mohair blend, fingering weight. It's a single ply. And I think that will become a very special shawl. I also made some gift purchases and didn't really want to leave. I would have much rather hung around a little bit longer, but we had to get on the road. I did not realize that taking that route home meant we would also go within a mile of Webb's, the gigantic yarn store. I had no idea. And when I saw the billboard announcing Webb's, there was a brief moment where I almost, you know, dashed my plans of getting home by a certain time and just took a trip to Webb's. But we had to come home. We had some other things we needed to do and deadlines to which we had to adhere. So hopefully in a future episode, I will tell you about a trip to Webb's, maybe when I acquire a list of projects that I need to purchase yarn for. That would be a good idea. And then maybe we could take a different route up. Vermont was beautiful. It was quite warm for the season. Usually it's not quite the same temperature in Vermont as it is here in the Delaware Water Gap. But it was pretty hot and sunny most of the time when we were there, and we spent a good deal of time watering seedlings so they would get a good start, and of course petting the dogs and taking long walks and all of that kind of thing. So all in all, it was a great trip, and also great, of course, to be back. It's probably come to your attention that quinoa is one of the hottest of food trends. these days. But in case you are not that familiar with the grain, I thought I would take a little bit of time to provide an overview and some history. One of the things I've enjoyed a lot in doing this Bulkman's cook-along is that I've felt obligated to do a little bit of research on each of these bulk items as I've been cooking with them. And I just like having that kind of information. In the case of quinoa, there's also some controversy, which I will talk about a little bit later. Quinoa is a pseudo grain. It's not a grain. Pseudo cereal is a name for foods that we cook and eat like grains, but they're not technically in the grain family. Botanically, quinoa is related to beets and chard and spinach, and the leaves can be eaten as well as the grain. Because it's grown high in the Andes, of course, what would be transported to Europe, to North America, would be the grains. Part of the popularity of quinoa has to do with its nutrient profile. It's just astounding how nutritious this ingredient really is. First of all, it's gluten-free, which makes it very accessible to people who have to adhere to a gluten-free diet. Also, 60% of the grain is the germ. When you think about the fact that 3% or slightly less than 3% of a grain of wheat is the germ, that's a really big difference and a very large increase in the amount of protein that you can get from quinoa. Quinoa is also very high in potassium, the highest of all of the grains on grain-like foods in potassium. And potassium helps control blood pressure, so it's often touted as a heart-healthy food. Yet another selling point of quinoa is that it is very quick cooking. So that makes it great for hot weather dining because you can boil some water or some stock, or you can season your water with whatever you like, and then add your quinoa, bring that up to a boil, reduce heat and simmer, or even just turn the heat off completely and let that quinoa absorb the water that's in the pan. Quinoa, like rice, is good when fluffed with a fork, so you want your quinoa to absorb all of the liquid that's in the pan before you're eating it, otherwise it will be soggy. I'm trying to think of how to describe the texture. It can be a little bit chewy, but it is not dense and heavy like amaranth. And it can have a pleasant kind of texture to it because that germ, which curls around like a little tail and gives quinoa its distinctive appearance, that can be a little bit crunchy, have a little bit of texture to it. Quinoa works well in hot dishes, cold dishes, just served at room temperature. It's truly an excellent canvas for local produce, cheeses, anything you would like to toss into it. It's important to remember, though, that the vast majority of quinoa that's available for sale in the United States is not local. It's not a local product. It's grown high in the Andes, and lately there has been some controversy and some concern about the sustainability of quinoa and the financial health of the farmers who grow it when there is such excessive demand for quinoa coming from all around the world. There are a few articles I've linked to in the show notes. One is about quinoa and the farmers and some disputes regarding rights to seeds and how quinoa can be cultivated to grow in other areas, how we could do the research to get it to grow in other areas when a lot of the growing is done by tribal people and they're quite insular and they don't care for any interference from outside parties. Another article is from NPR and it has to do with some quinoa growing that's been happening in very high altitudes of Colorado. Quinoa doesn't do well in high heat, so even temperatures sustained just over 90 degrees could be very damaging to a crop. So that does limit the potential places where this could grow. But because of the nutritional value and because people who try quinoa seem to like it very much, it would be, it's likely to continue to be cultivated in areas other than the Andes Mountains. If you haven't tried cooking some quinoa in your kitchen, July is the month to try it because we're featuring quinoa for the Bulk Bins Cook Along, and you are invited to try recipes, post photos, get ideas from others on the Yarns at Yinhu Ravelry board. We have a thread each month for the Bulk Bins Cook Along. You can also use hashtag BulkBinsCAL if you're posting photos or other information on social media. This month, I've developed a recipe for Southern Bell quinoa. This grew from an idea I was given by Sarah Swensty when she posted a recipe for quinoa that had coconut flakes and kale. So not having all of the ingredients for the recipe Sarah posted, I took a look at the ingredients available in my own kitchen, and I did have some lovely kale from our local CSA. And I also had some coconut flakes. I decided to go with a very southern feel, so I added some Indian spices and I added apricots and pecans as well to give it a real southern flair. This was really good when it was chilled, an excellent summer salad that I encourage you to try. The winner of the Bulk Bins Cook Along post for our wild card month of June is RMH258 with post 21 for a snack cake using coconut and almond flour. So congratulations and thank you to everyone who participates in the Ravelry boards for the Bulk Bins Cook Along. RMH258, please contact me with a personal message and let me know what pattern on Ravelry is striking your fancy lately, and I will make a gift of that pattern for you. I also want to remind Yarns at Yinhu listeners that we have another week or so for the planning thread for our upcoming Asymmetrical. It doesn't start until August 1st. But the planning thread has been open for a while, and it's a place for listeners to mention what pattern they might be using for this craft along. Specifically, if you're interested in any of Simone Eich's Vollwerk pattern designs, many of which are asymmetrical, I encourage you to make a post about that within the next few days or so. The next time I record a podcast, I will be announcing 5 winners from that thread who will each win a free pattern from Simone Eich of Vollwerk. You are not obligated to knit that pattern for the Asymmetrical, but I hope you will. And most of the folks who have posted are writing things about how difficult it is to decide, how they can't believe this is a designer they hadn't heard of, and they're so happy to be introduced to another designer with some great patterns. There are also some patterns that are great ways to use up scrap yarn or things you may already have in stash. And of course, you are welcome for this craft along to double dip into any other contest for prizes that may be of interest to you.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is Sweet, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider liking the show's Facebook page or leaving a rating or a review on iTunes. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire, just like Linda Curtis, but I don't know why. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Nature's ever get you high till your face is smile. Jump a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.